Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortez Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts. Today on The Scoop, a community crisis group called The Situation Table meet weekly in Smithers to respond to acute community crises. Listen to our CICK news story here on The Scoop to find out if they are effective at helping people in crisis. BC Ferries is adding additional sailings to their summer schedule. This should work out as long as BC Ferries is able to keep staff to accommodate the new sailings between Quadra Island, Cortez Island, and Vancouver Island. But first, the city of Revelstoke is having to conserve water use to mitigate irresponsible water use in the upcoming hot and dry season.
The city of Revelstoke has introduced new watering regulations in an effort to ensure water security and promote responsible water consumption in the community. The new four-stage water use restriction plan for outdoor water received unanimous approval during the June 11th City Council meeting. The regulations are now in effect and apply to all properties using city water. A statement issued by the city notes that last year, Revelstoke experienced Stage 2 restrictions for the first time ever. The city said staff decided a change from the existing two-stage water regulations to a more gradual four-stage system would, quote, be better suited to our residents while ensuring there's enough water to provide Revelstoke residents with continued levels of services, even if the drought conditions seen across BC continue, end quote. The updated regulations also provide a more equal approach for residential watering, with the introduction of a three-day-per-week approach for odd and even-numbered houses. Under Stage 1, odd-numbered houses are able to water between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m. on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, while even-numbered houses are able to water during the same times on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. The city said this will leave Mondays set aside to, quote, assist public works operations at the water treatment plant and throughout the distribution system, end quote. The new watering structure will also ensure the availability of firefighting supply and drinking water, even in drought conditions. Stage 1 watering restrictions are in effect year-round and apply to the use of water for sprinkling, irrigation, washing driveways, sidewalks, and roadways. Should the need arise, an increase to Stages 2, 3, or 4 will be determined based on water supply capacity and demand on the system. Stage 2 restricts outdoor water use to 2 days per week, Stage 3 to 1 day per week, while Stage 4 would result in no outdoor watering being allowed at all. The city said residents will be notified of any increase in watering restrictions through local media, social media, and on the city's website. For 92.5 Stoke FM in Revelstoke, I'm Melissa Jameson.
This is a CKTZ News update. I'm Louis Belcourt.
Route 24, the Quadra to Cortez ferry route, will be getting an additional sailing this summer, with the changes running from June 20th to September 2nd. With the new schedule, a new 725 ferry from Cortez offers an earlier departure from Cortez, and according to the BC Ferry Service Notice, quote, the changes are expected to minimize possible sailing delays and provide better brake coverage for our crews, end quote. Refer to bcferries.com or the Cortez Tideline at cortezisland.ca for the new temporary schedule in full. I spoke with BC Ferries for more.
My name is Lisa Yuzda, and I'm a senior communications advisor with BC Ferries.
Please tell us a little bit about the new schedule changes coming into play this summer to and from Cortez.
Yes, there are going to be changes that are going to be for the busy summer months, and that will be from June 20th until September 2nd. Many of the days you're going to see scheduling go from 6 ferries a day, which people are used to now, to 7 ferries a day. There's a couple reasons for this. Part of this is recognizing that there's increases in seasonal demand and overall increased number of visitors to Cortez Island. Also, there are some accommodations that we're making for what we're required to accommodate our staff as far as providing coverage for their breaks. And so we've made some adjustments to the schedule to accommodate both of those factors. And one of the key things people will see is the addition of a 7:25 a.m. sailing, departing Cortez Island.
And how long will this new summer schedule remain?
This will stay in place until September 2nd. So I really want to impress upon people, because we are all creatures of habit and we get used to catching ferries when we want to catch ferries. So before June 20th, for people to go take a look at BC Ferries website, bcferries.com, and check out the new schedules for when you'll want to catch your sailings to and from the island, or from and to the island for people who live there, because there are slight changes. Like if you're someone who is used to taking the 9:50 a.m. on a Monday off the island, you now will choose between a 9:15 or an 11 a.m. So they're just, when we're putting 7 sailings in instead of 6, there's just some little schniggling around of when the times are for departures.
So why were these changes made?
So there are two factors of why these changes are made, primarily because we recognize that there are increases in demand for people wanting to go to and from Cortez Island in the summer. And there are also some needs for BC Ferries to accommodate staffing requirements for our groups.
So how will these changes affect travel to and from Cortez during this summer?
The hope is that it'll make things better for people wanting to travel, that there's an additional sailing, and that it will also help customers out by when they're traveling from Cortez or going from Cortez to Quadra to Vancouver Island, that it will cut down on possible sailing waits that people sometimes encounter, especially during the busy summer months.
Louis Beaucourt, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
My name is Bronwyn Young. I work for Northern Society for Domestic Peace as the Housing and Support Director, and I also help co-chair the Situation Table.
And I am Jocelyn Feudart. I am a police officer in Smithers, and I'm also a registered social worker, and I coordinate the Situation Table in Smithers.
So the Situation Table is a multi-agency approach to community issues. Can you tell me what model was used to create the Smithers Situation Table, and maybe even if you want to break down some of the functions as well?
So the Situation Table is managed by the Ministry of Public Safety and Solicitor General. So through a program called the Collaborative Public Safety Programs, the Situation Table was created. It is a model for community safety and well-being, and the goal of the table is to wrap services around our community's most vulnerable population. Our Situation Table, we get together and we work with folks in Smithers and out in Whitsett. So there is a Situation Table in Houston. New Hazleton has also been provided with funding dollars, but our table focuses on our community in Smithers and in Whitsett.
How often does the table meet? Can you tell me what a typical meeting looks like?
Sure. Members of the community who work with justice, social service, and policing meet together every week at the courthouse. And we start the table with any updates that might be happening in community for our members at the table. And then we will go over situations that were opened the week before or may still be open from previous weeks to see if we can close those now, saying that things have been supported well, or however that might have worked out. Then we open up for anybody to bring forward new situations that they feel somebody is in acutely elevated risk.
Yeah, I think just to clarify so folks know what acutely elevated risk is. So AER, or acutely elevated risk, refers to situations where individual families are facing a composite level of risk factor spanning across multiple human service and justice disciplines, and where there's a high probability of severe harm occurring soon.
Okay. It sounds really lithe then, that it's something that can actually move and work as fast as maybe these incidents and emergencies are coming up in the community.
It's really quick. The goal of the table is to actually provide a wraparound approach within 24 to 48 hours.
Wow.
So really, we allocate 1 hour to to bringing situations to the table. And then we stay within that, within the next half an hour, to really focus on, okay, what are we going to do? And then we make that intervention within the meeting. So there's no going back to your office and getting pulled into something else. We're really addressing it in the moment so that we can provide that service as quickly as possible.
When did this start happening? And was it the police that actually spawned or created this program?
I know that the original creator of the hub was actually somebody in Prince Albert. It was created because law enforcement saw that there was a real need to move work away from the police. So it was really to address these root causes of crime, because people come into contact with police who may not have any criminal activity.
Yeah.
And then they're pathologized for maybe having a health issue, and that shouldn't be happening. So this way we can try to move that work away from the police to appropriate social service agencies.
Implementing a more community-minded approach to issues such as rising numbers of people living in encampments and mental health experiences and emergencies, as you've mentioned, as well as things like food insecurity and violence, what positive effects does this have in the community that you've seen?
I've seen positive effects with the collaboration of service providers and the very respectful sharing of information to help support individuals and community. I've seen relationships build between service providers and, more importantly, really, between service providers and community members who are struggling. We have really benefited from this approach because it does take a community, and it takes a community who cares and who's willing to put forward action in a timely way. And the folks who we serve through this table recognize that and are benefited from that.
Awesome. Great.
I would say one of the biggest things I've noticed too has been when we approach an individual or family and say, hey, we're here to support you, these are the services we have to offer you to help you get out of crisis and connect you to services, people are often shocked that there are this many people in the community that care about me. And I think that is really heartwarming, and I think it's important for us to remember that we are one humanity and that we are here as a community to support each other no matter what. And seeing people be so appreciative of that, and also seeing people go, we had no idea that the police cared. We had no idea that this service was around. And so that has been really heartwarming for me to see that, and the collective, just to see that as service providers and justice and health, we're not in this work alone. Mm-hmm. We're in it together. And if we pool our resources, we can actually deliver a service to our community that's exceptional.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think what's surprising is just the not a one size fits all answer to so many intricate issues and experiences that someone might be having as well. So individually, I want to speak a little bit about how your organizations, I'm saying benefit from the table, but and when I use the term benefit, I do mean in if it relieves workload or stress, or if even maybe just the transparency between agencies makes it easier. So Bronwyn, because the Northern Society of Domestic Peace is likely overrun with trying to fill a lot of gaps in the community. I have been able to speak to you a couple of times and witnessed just the sheer amount of services that the NSDP has to provide. We're looking at things like need for safety, beds, safe housing, security, counseling, emergency response, childcare, and et cetera. So how does the situation table, how does that benefit the Northern Society of Domestic Peace?
I think it's really beneficial to be able to meet people while they're in community to offer supports with a group of service providers, so that if and when they are utilizing Northern Society's supports, we have a relationship already. We have other people who we know in the community are also on their support team, and we can help collaborate that. So that, yes, that real sense of community among support providers has been very helpful. We often are met with crises, multiple ones, day after day.
Yeah. So, Jocelyn, RCMP have a battle every day to protect the members of our community, but they also need to build trust with very vulnerable populations as well. So does the situation table create real connections for people who maybe don't have any reason or experience in trusting the police?
Yeah, for sure. So I think transparency is really important. And I think it's important to acknowledge that trust is very hard to build because a lot of vulnerable people and marginalized groups have very negative experiences with the police. And that's something that I understand very deeply. And so I guess the first thing I want to do is honor that and honor that, yes, there is an issue trusting police. And I completely understand that. And I think that we are working to build that trust through collaborative relationships with service providers, but also people with lived experience. Mm. And I think that within the RCMP and within enforcement and public safety, there's a lot of language around change. We want to see change, but what does change actually look like? And how do we implement that on the front lines? Mm-hmm. And I think the situation table is a mechanism for us to really implement change by collaborating with people with lived experience and saying, hey, what do you need to be healthy? Yeah. And how can I use my power that I have within the system to give some power back to you so that you can be healthy? And we've seen, I think, at the detachment level, a decrease in call volume. And wow. I think that's really important to share because what the situation table has done is trying to move work away from the police.
Mm-hmm. And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenai, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.